together for Mario and enjoy.
So thank you and good afternoon, everybody. So I'm Mario, and today I'd like to talk a bit how we're working to implement an S3 fronted cold storage at CERN. Just very quickly, a bit about me. So I'm a computing engineer at CERN. I started just 3 months ago, and I joined the tape archival and backup team. And my first task in the team was actually to review proof of concept that was done at CERN by a summer student last year. Concerning putting a tape backend to an S3 endpoint, and my ultimate goal in there will be to design an S3 interface for our tape infrastructure. Just briefly, what we will discuss today, so we'll go over the project goal and give some technical context that will shed more light on why the decisions and the discussions, why do what I will talk about. Then we'll analyze the proof of concept that has been developed last year, and then we'll go over brainstorming of the possible architectural solutions that we will be considering. And at the end, there will be some time for questions. So first of all, what is CERN? So it's the world's biggest laboratory for particle physics. It mostly concerns itself with the fundamental physics study, and it's mostly famous for its LHC. It's a Large Hadron Collider, which is a particle accelerator that is located beneath the Geneva area, spanning across Switzerland and France border. Why does CERN need tape in the first place? Well, because experiments need to write a lot of data, and it needs to be stored somewhere. And the tapes constitute a very efficient means of storage. In fact, just last year, last December, we hit one exabyte of stored data in our tape libraries for experiment data. But that's not the only use case. We also store user data for, could be for various reasons, for compliance or disaster recovery. But that's another use case. And the way that we store them, so we have developed internally software to manage the tape libraries, which is called the CERN Tape Archive, or CTA. And it's open source software. And so the idea here is to have CTA as a tape backend to an S3 plus Glacier API endpoint. Why this? Because so S3 is pretty much the industry standard. There's a lot of client support for it. And also, we want to fit into the ecosystem that is already there with the S3. So we want to avoid reinventing the wheel of creating another protocol. So S3 would constitute a good way to interface with it. I should also mention that for the time being, this project will, at least internally, will mostly target the user data archival use case. So to give a brief visual about it, so imagine this being the whole service that we want to build. So it's backup service for users. You have backup buckets, and there must be an S3 point somewhere. But you can identify within this system a subset, which I would call the appliance, which has its own S3 endpoint and is the one responsible for actual physical tape storage, regardless of how the system is internally built. And this will be our main challenge to build it. So first, technical context about CERN Tape Archive. So again, it's the software that provides physical access to the tape libraries. And the interesting thing about it is that you don't interact directly with it. CTA needs a disk buffer in front, which is an intermediary storage medium, which will act as a buffer between the client and tape. And this is because the tape medium is really high latency. It's not always ready to write, so you need this intermediary space to store that on. And for this reason, you can see CTA as a tape backend for the disk buffer. And for example, the most support, there are some supported flows for the files. You can write files to the disk buffer and it will be archived, or you can request the file to be recalled and it will be written back to the disk buffer if it was not already there. There are more flows, but we'll mostly focus on these. There's not enough time, unfortunately. And it's free and open source software. It's on CERN's GitLab or on GitHub. And just to be a bit more clear, so this is an example of the VRChiral flow. There will be some data producers which will dump data into the disk buffer. And the disk buffer, which knows that is being backed by CTA, will basically queue work into the archive queue. And eventually, the tape drives will, when they are free to perform work, will pick up some of the work that needs to be done and will mount a new cartridge in there and will start writing to tape. You can see there is a 400 megabyte per second average write. There is a reason for that, and this is for each of the tape drives. And the recall workflow works in reverse. So one thing that I didn't mention here is that as soon as a file is written to tape, it's actually truncated in the disk buffer. So the disk buffer retains the metadata, but the content of the data is not on the disk buffer anymore. All of the data is fully only on tape. And given the situation, you have the recall workflow to call the file back. So there is a component that will ask the disk buffer, actually, for the file, for restoring it from tape. And this will append it again to a retrieve queue. And whenever a drive is ready and the conditions match, and the conditions allow it, it will mount the cartridge for which it was requested and will dump the content of the file back into the disk buffer. So it will rehydrate the file. Metadata was already there, but now the content is also back there, and the client can access it. So a bit more about the disk buffer sits in front of CTA. So it's the one holding the metadata. You can see it as a file system hierarchy, so you write as you would to a file system. But one thing that should be noted, that the metadata lives only here. Whenever CTA reads from the disk buffer, it will only read the data and write exclusively that to tape. So EOS, I didn't mention that, but this is the software that we use for as a disk buffer in CERN. So EOS stands for EOS Open Storage, and it's also an open source technology. But basically, the fact that metadata is held only by it means that its persistence is critical. So if you lose EOS, for example, you would be able to retrieve the file content, but not their metadata, so you wouldn't know what the files are. And difference with the normal file system is that EOS is aware of files being online or offline. So if the content is there, you can consider the file online. You can retrieve it right away. But if the content is on tape, even though the metadata is there, then the file is offline because you need a retrieval operation to be able to read it back. And it's explicitly designed for a large and stable throughput. This is important for tape. Because actually tape has, curiously, a minimum speed that it should be written and read to, written to and read from. And this is because of how it works, because it's a linear tape, and so it spins, and breaking it is not something that you can do immediately. If there's no data, it cannot stop right away. So there are some constraints around speed. About this technical context, I want to take away the main points about the minimum speed for the tapes. So the whatever solution needs to be able, you can see these as constraints or features. So it needs to guarantee a minimum speed, stable and minimum speed. Then the fact that metadata lives on the disk buffer is also important. Losing the disk buffer, whatever implementation is, it becomes critical because of that. Then there's no object affinity logic in CTAs of today. By this, I mean that whenever there is a bunch of work to do, a bunch of files to write on tape, then a CTA currently doesn't have any logic around which files to write. It will just do some work. But for some files, it may make sense to live on the same tape because they have a higher chance of being restored together. So you want to mount only one tape and not more of them. Also, one currently present semantic on CTA is that the file is considered safe when it's fully on tape and not if it's in between. So if you write on the buffer only, then it's not considered safe yet, and the clients are able to ask the disk buffer if the file is on tape or not. And also there's no modify file semantics or the only delete, which may be relevant if you intend to interact with an S3 bucket. Some operation that S3 can do may not be doable as far as CTA is concerned. Speaking of which, the other half of the technical introduction that I want to do is about S3 and Glacier API. Just really quickly, I think a lot of people are familiar with it, but I still some may not be. So S3, you know, is a product of AWS, and which offers object storage, and you talk with using the S3 API. It's a REST interface, so HTTP. And here on the left, you can see an example call that you can do. For example, the get object operation lets you retrieve the content and metadata of a file, and you would specify the most important arguments are bucket and key, which are relevant for understanding the S3 service. So the bucket is a namespace, a domain of files. You can see it as its own file system. And the key is the path within the file system. So on the right, you can see how it maps to an HTTP request. You can see that the bucket and the file key appear both in the path URL. And a get object operation will essentially be a get HTTP verb. And this is the general idea behind S3, a REST interface. And the kind of operation you can do is on object level, write, read, delete objects, on bucket level, among which, so you can, of course, create enumerate buckets, but there's also the lifecycle configuration, which is really important. And the previous talk touched upon it quite extensively. So you can configure the bucket for automated movement between storage classes, which are abstractions of which kind of storage medium will hold your data. Then you have metadata and other operations. But one point that I want, that is very relevant for this talk, is the Glacier API subset of S3. So you can see that there, it lets you do the archival and recall of the files, just what CTA models, but using the S3 API. So regarding the archival operation, it's actually not an imperative operation. So you cannot ask the S3 API to move a file to cold storage unless you copy the whole object. What is usually done is that you set a lifecycle policy in the bucket so that you're able to tell, for example, after 1 year, move the file to tape. And it gets moved to a different storage class. And as soon as this happens, the object gets truncated, and then you get an invalid object state reply if you try to get the content, because the file is offline. It's not there anymore. To get it online again, you should do a recall operation. This is an imperative, so you request a restore object, and the system will do in the background some work to get your file from tape back into the bucket and rehydrate it. And after the operation is completed, then the file will be accessible again. Most important point, Glacier is a user-facing API. It doesn't specify any kind of interface to the tape infrastructure. You have no way to tell how to transfer files to whatever tape system that you use, because it's all an internal detail. So the way that this will be doable is implementation specific. And different S3 implementation among the open source available ones offer a different degree of both compatibility with S3 and mechanism to let you move files to tape. So with that intro, we can finally take a look at the proof of concept that was worked on last summer. So the architecture that was picked was to take the current stack, so disk buffer in front of CTA, and then another layer. In this case, Nuba was picked. It's also an open source software with commercial production usage. It provides an S3 interface and a way to write files to tape. And the whole of all of these three components for the appliance in the schema that I showed you before. Nuba is deployed on a Kubernetes cluster. There's an operator, so you deploy the custom resource, and you automatically will get an S3 endpoint in your cluster. It stores internally the data on this what's called NSFS, so namespace file system. Which is essentially a directory, so it maps objects to file system paths. You can see how, in fact, in the POC, we deployed Nuba using a local file system. So you mount that directory within the pod, and you declare that there will be your storage, and so it really maps to files. And the way that you can write to tape is by using the Tape Cloud interface that they offer, so in which we can dive a bit. So how does it work in this case? So it implements storage classes as AWS does. So there's the warm storage class and there's Glacier. Whenever you write to Glacier, be it because you do it explicitly or because a lifecycle rule does it for you, nothing happens actually. The request gets appended to a log called migrate log. The same is true for retrieval. Whenever you call a restore object action, then your operation is written down to the recall log, and these are all asynchronous. So what will actually do the operation is whenever a cron job or an operator will call this manage NSFS script, which will actually do some log rotation and managing, locking, and actually delegate the most important part of the work, so actually moving data to tape, to another script, which you write. So there's an exec interface to it. You can write the migrate and recall script. And basically the log file will be passed on to you. And that log file essentially contains the files under the NSFS, so the name of the files that should be moved to tape. So just move them one by one. And that's up to you, up to your implementation. So you can do it however you'd like. So we tested it out. And what did we observe from this? So exec interface is indeed very flexible because it leaves all of the heavy load to you. It's also smart enough to not recall files, for example, if the disk buffer is full. So because if it's close to full, then you shouldn't put more stuff into the disk buffer. And the user will have to wait, basically. So the user will do a restore operation, but will have to wait for it to happen because the infrastructure is not ready. I think that documentation could use some improvement in this case. For example, we found some outdated documentation on the about the log format, and also some things weren't unclear, like the boundary of failure handling when the responsibility. When something fails during the script execution. Then some features are missing. As far as I could understand, the storage class lifecycle is not doable, so you can just write directly to Glacier. And also, we observe a failure at around 10K simultaneous migration, but honestly, this requires investigation. I didn't have the time to look into it, but this could very well be to our implementation of the migration script. Because it was done in Bash, and it's a POC. So a few more words about the architecture. The duplication of the disk buffer is something that we have implemented basically here. There's Nuba and there's US. Each has their own metadata copy, which is not ideal. It could introduce synchronization problems, and also duplication of the provision space is also not ideal. I call this the one more layer approach, which made troubleshooting really painful because there's a chain of heterogeneous technologies at work, one after the other in sequence. Also, the file content migration being initiated by Nuba is not ideal because, again, I said that tape is so it doesn't fit the CTA model because CTA basically is a long-running process that will wait for the drive to be ready to do work. So if you run a script and you delegate the data movement to this script, it doesn't fit the CTA model because the CTA expects the object to be fully there for it. So if you want to link Nuba with CTA, you need a disk buffer in the middle to hold the file or a long-running implementation. But let's not go there. And last point, which may be very specific to CERN, but there's an abundance of Ceph expertise because there's a lot of production usage of Ceph. And so we also wanted to take a look at its implementation of Rados Gateway as well before going on. So with that premise, let's go over a few solutions. But first, one last premise. There is one important feature of Ceph that I should mention, which is Zipper project, also called Software Abstraction Layer. So Ceph has internally split the way that it enters the S3 API from the storage driver. So you could theoretically implement a driver to write somewhere else other than Rados, for example, a POSIX-PHY system. And you can also write filters. One example of which is the Lua scripting, also mentioned during the previous The previous talk. And the other important feature is the cloud transition and cloud restore feature, in which you can declare a storage class, a cold storage class, which actually maps to another bucket instead of an actual storage, cold storage medium. So in this case, you can chain buckets and make them colder and colder with this feature. And I mentioned this because again, in the schema of mental model that I worked with, I distinguish the appliance, which has the actual tape, the responsibility of moving data to tape, from anything else that counts before it, which may very well be another bucket, thanks to this feature. And there are a few benefits around it. There is isolation and control. Like, for example, you isolate your appliance from, you can control the bandwidth between the buckets. So, because the appliance needs to output a stable throughput to the drives, for example, and other advantages. So that said, our concern here, what I will show you from in the solution space, is about the appliance. So I grouped them into the solution families because there's a few ways how you could do this. These are just examples, but first approach, one more layer, what we did with the proof of concept. We saw the pros and cons of this. So, it's an already working system. So EOS and CTA are one after the other. And EOS can already output the throughput that CTA needs. So you add a layer on top. It's easy to do. But again, there's the metadata duplication. You need to maintain your own storage driver. So you need to maintain the interface between the two. And it's painful to debug because it's heterogeneous. Let's take a look, perhaps, what I call solution 1.5, one more thin layer. And a better way to do it would perhaps have a thin S3 protocol translator. So since S3 should basically reproduce the semantics of EOS, basically you put object, read object, restore object. So those are all things that EOS does. So, and in fact, one colleague of mine has created a project called EOS S3, which is a module for Versity Gateway, which does this exact translation. So this is another way to do it. You save yourself the metadata duplication because there's a direct translation. So EOS is the only owner of the metadata. But you have to care about a thorough emulation of a S3 API, for example. It's on you. Another way you could do it is what I call client-driven emulated Glacier, in which you reverse the relationship. So there's CTA. So S3 being a storage technology, the question comes naturally, why not use that as a disk buffer? Maybe CTA could be a client for it. I mean, the elephant in the room on this question is the fact that the S3 API, at Glacier in particular, does not provide you any mechanism to work, to emulate migration to cold storage. So you cannot really ask the project, the file to go offline, for example, like it's done usually in the back of an S3 service. But you could emulate it. One way you could do it is, for example, CTA can write object metadata. So you can mark an object as offline, for example, through a tag. And the Lua script, whenever it finds the tag as offline, it will reply in the expected way. It will emulate Glacier by saying, no, invalid object state. This object is offline. And then CTA is free to work with the objects. That's one other way to do it. Another way would be out-of-band data control. So we said that S3, for example, doesn't provide you a way, the S3 API, doesn't provide you a way to basically move the object to cold storage as a client. But perhaps there are internal ways to do this, like out-of-band ways. One way could be to access Librados objects directly to truncate and rehydrate objects. Another way could be to implement either non-standard S3 API or some tooling, for example, through some other medium. These are just theoretical ideas. None of this is implemented. But this could be other ways in which this could be done. And of course, pros and cons are very much implementation dependent. For example, your risk, if you access Librados object, your risk of exposing internal details, which are not guaranteed. I mean, they are in the documentation, but I think the right to change them, I mean, there's nothing set in stone there. They could change in a new release, perhaps. And yeah, in the end, there are a few solutions which I won't spend much words about. I included them for completeness. One of them is CTA implements the S3 API. I think there are enough S3 API providers which are open source, and in addition to being reinventing the wheel, it also introduced a new functional scope for CTA, which is disk buffers. CTA is a part of a full solution. It doesn't necessarily need to be the full appliance here, but it can be the tape backend of an appliance. And so it would introduce a scope creep here. And same if you wanted to theoretically create, like bring the disk buffer to CTA, but then create this standard interface to integrate with whatever solution. But here again, new functional scope for CTA, new problems. We are not considering that at the moment. So the next step for us would be to test out some of these solutions and see what works best. But I'm also interested if any of you has implemented this already to hear about your thoughts, your pains, and your joys with your approach. So I'm available for the rest of FOSDEM. So if you want to talk, I'll be happy to. Just quickly acknowledging some of my colleagues, Michael, Vladimir, and Niels for providing some technical feedback and graphs, as well as the Ceph website and Mermaid for the graphics. And that will be all.
Hi. So this is an alternative to the tape rest API interfaces. And second question, there is something, some checks on the checksum of the file when there is a retrieval from the retrieved data and the checksum saved on the metadata of the else.
So first question, tape rest API as in Ceph? Sure. So the first question is, this is an alternative to the tape rest API. So this is about Ceph, no?
Yeah.
Is there a tape rest API?
Tape REST API, no, the protocol, the API used by WebCG for data, for retrieve data from tape.
Varsity Gateway, you mean?
There is a WebCG standard that is tape REST API to recall file from tape.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, no, this is mostly about, so that's basically it. So S3 doesn't provide an interface. Will Ceph implement this interface? So I don't know, I'm not part of the Ceph process project, but that would be an interesting thing. So I wasn't aware of this, so thank you for that. And the second question was about the checksumming, checking whenever a cloud object is retrieved, right? So the object cannot change in that case. Is what you mean. So if the object changes on the second bucket, then the first bucket will return an error. Is this what you mean?
Or if there is an error when recalling the file from tape to disk, there is some checks about that the recall is done correctly and all data is read correctly from tape, or you assume that the reading is always successful from tape to disk?
As far as I remember, so I'm not a CTA developer, but I think that CTA does it on its own.
How often is it saved on tape? Only one copy, or are they redundant?
So CTA supports both. Repeat the question. So does there's only one copy of the file on tape, or there are more than one? Yeah. So CTA allows you to configure that. You can configure CTA storage classes, which define how many copies of the data would you like.
Just a basic question. If I took one tape out of the library, would you be able to identify which files have been lost relatively quickly with EOS?
So question is, if you were to retrieve a tape from a library, would you be able to take a look at the tape and figure out which files are lost?
Would you be able to work out from EOS which files are on this tape?
From EOS which files are on this tape. So this information is held, actually yes. So basically the way that it works is, but you won't need CTA, this is the thing. So EOS by itself doesn't. Because the way that CTA and EOS basically agree on where a file is, so how can you track a file? Basically, So on US, there is the concept of file path, right? And on CTA, there is no such concept. So how does it happen? So CTA, whenever there is a file, will also try to figure out if that file is already on tape. And how does it do that? It looks at extended attributes of the object. So if it's not there, if there's no extended attribute with the archive ID, then it will create a new one for it, an identifier internally to CTA. It will write it as an extended attribute. And from then on, that file on US will be trackable on tape, but only through CTA. So CTA tracks where the archives ID are on which tape and where. And US only cares about knowing the file path and the archive ID. So this is the chain.
Sorry.
Okay, time's up. If you have another question, please meet me later.